Marla Rose is an award-nominated journalist, columnist, author, and event planner, a vegan for more than 21 years. Marla is co-founder of Chicago Vegan Mania, the largest free vegan event in Chicago, and October 1st will be the 8th year. She is also co-founder of VeganStreet.com and Vegan Street Media with her husband, which aims to empower vegan businesses, nonprofits, and advocates to build their brands and promote their products, services, and messages to an enthusiastic audience by providing innovative, compelling, and effective stories, images, and marketing tools and strategies. Marla, how are you today?
Hi, Karen. It's so nice to hear your voice. I'm good.
I'm sending you a big hug, big virtual hug here.
I know. This is kind of weird. Like, I realize we haven't talked in person for a while, and you're one of my favorite people.
Oh, and back at you. We're just at it all the time. At it.
There's no rest for the weary, right?
I think I was at your first Chicago Vegan Mania 8 years ago, and it was an amazing first event.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we had no idea what to expect, and thankfully you were one of the people who, you know, reached out to me and was like, hey, I hear you guys are planning something.
I want to be there.
And we hadn't even really planned to have speakers, and I think you were one of the first people who reached out to me and kind of planted that seed. Mm-hmm. And then from then on, we've always had speakers. But yes, back in the old days, it was, you know, our first few years, we were in kind of like a old castle-like building with lots of little rooms.
So yeah, I remember that building. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people do. But now it's scaled up quite a bit, and we're really looking forward to this year's. This is our 8th, which is amazing, and can't wait.
Yeah. Well, times have really changed.
We'll have to have you back one of these years.
Yes. And I love Chicago for so many reasons. I mean,
we love you.
I mean, there's great food in Chicago, but Chicago, actually outside of Chicago, Evanston is where I got some intense healing when I went through my romp with cancer 10 years ago.
I remember.
And it was always fun. People don't believe this, but I only have good memories of having chemotherapy at the Block Center. And part of it was I would get infused with my toxic poison, and then I would go to Chicago and have fun and go to the great restaurants.
Yeah, who would think that you can combine those two things?
Yeah, it was
but
really fun.
I remember that you had such interesting parallels happening with your whole healing, with the painting and the block and everything.
It's kind of
all combined together.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because a short version of that story is now published in a new book called 25 Women Who Survived Cancer, Notable Women, Inspiring Stories Healing. And I'm offering signed copies at my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, or you can get copies at Amazon. And there are some amazing women in this book, like Patti LuPone and Robin Robertson.
I have long thought and hoped that you would write that story down, so that sounds like the perfect
I finished the full book. It's not published yet, but it's I have people reading it right now, and that's my full story. But that's coming later.
Excellent.
Yeah, but, you know, you've been at this, you and your husband, John, you've been at this for so long, and you're just nothing's stopping you.
Right? You just made me feel kind of tired the way you said. No, I'm kidding. You know what? Honestly, to be perfectly honest, I wake up, and I'm sure I get the feeling you do too, I wake up every day energized and excited. And, you know, I mean, even though it is so often so disheartening and so heartbreaking, it is also so empowering to take this other path and to sort of wake people up to what's happening. And like, I can't imagine a different way, you know. It's just I feel so grateful every day to be plugged into this and to have the opportunity to spread awareness the way that we can. And there's so many talented people in the vegan movement coming at it from so many different vantage points and so many different perspectives, whether they're bakers and foodie type people, or academics, or lawyers, or amazing communicators like you. You know, it's just like we're really closing the awareness gap.
And don't
all of us together.
And don't you just love eating? Don't you just love what we're eating?
Yeah,
I
love our food.
I love our food.
I do. I just like it's so. I just feel sometimes like such an alien when I look at the information people like the associations people have with veganism. That
yeah.
is like.
It's crazy.
You know, boring, bland.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like we have to like push ourselves away from the table because this is so good. You know, it's and like you as a longtime vegan, we remember when there was, you know, just the smallest amount of options out there for vegans. You know, and it's almost like. You have to kind of get back to a healthier way of living because there are so many delicious options.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's kind of dangerous sometimes.
I know. And, you know,
yeah,
I was...
Yeah, we're so, so lucky. I am so grateful every single day for this community, for this information and this knowledge and this awareness. I'm so grateful.
This, this aquafaba thing that, you know, just started a couple years ago, this is really dangerous. And
I know.
This is really dangerous.
When we were first figuring out how this crazy stuff worked, it was like pour sugar in a bowl. And I was like, okay, that one worked. Okay, let's try it with vanilla. Okay, that worked.
Yeah. You know? And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's too good.
Really,
it's really
like,
too
it's
good.
It's got the same, the right amount of, protein and carbohydrate or something, I don't know, it's something science-y that adds up to egg whites.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an idea. So, okay. Yeah, and it works great in savory applications too.
Yeah.
You know?
Really phenomenal. We've got our test kitchen at home and we're just starting to go crazy with it.
Crazy.
I want to get serious for a moment.
Yes.
Because there is a very serious side to why we do what we do with joy.
Uh-huh.
And what reminded me, and I thought about asking you on the program for so many times just because you're you and you're amazing.
Oh, thank you.
But I was thumbing through the Veg News magazine, and you did a great in-depth article called Milk Money. And I just came, as I mentioned, from this edX forum at the UN. And one of the things that was chilling is these passionate people were talking about eliminating hunger and extreme poverty and food sustainability and all this stuff. And they never talked about the cow in the room.
Right.
And there was one businessman who was a speaker was talking about clean milk. Feeding cows with some enzymes that reduce their greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, it's like people would rather, you know, jump through hoops of fire while, you know, averting flying darts than, you know, possibly question, well, like, maybe let's just shift away from this paradigm altogether. They will try the most complicated, expensive, and flawed ways to avoid facing the truth, which is that it's just a very problematic, quote-unquote, food from many different points of view, you know, whether you're looking at health, whether you're looking at ethics, whether you're looking at the environment. It's like they keep using, you know, they keep trying to hit a nail with something that's other than a hammer. You know what I mean? It's like they keep using the same mistaken tool and just kind of keep trying to modify that tool. And it's just inherently, innately flawed, you know?
I'm thinking about how when people are enlightened and they think about becoming vegetarian, for example, and they stop eating meat and they're continuing to consume eggs and dairy and even wearing wool. And I've been having some conversations with people recently, but what we don't realize, many people don't realize, is that dairy cows and egg hens and wool-giving sheep are probably more tortured than the animals that go straight to slaughter and probably do more damage environmentally than the animals that go straight to slaughter for meat. And we don't see that.
For definite. And these things, like, I think I read somewhere, I'd need to, like, fact check this, but that leather is one of the most profitable aspects of the meat industry. So, mm-hmm. like, you know, when people talk about, like, a lot of times one of the conceits that you'll hear from hunters is I use the whole animal, you know. And you know what I say is so does Animal Ag. They extract every last little piece out of every animal that they use to make it profitable, you know. So, I mean, one of the things that I think is encouraging is, I don't know about you, but when I first went vegetarian, you know, I was 15, and this was in the pre-internet days, I thought that that was the end of the road. I didn't know anything about veganism, yeah. you know. I didn't know about the cruelties of the dairy and egg and wool and leather industries. But then, and so it took me 12 years to close that knowledge gap, you know, and really be exposed to some people who helped to usher that into my life. But I feel like, I mean, it would be interesting to see any statistics on this, but I feel like there is less of that lag time these days because there is such a shrunken, there's just not as much knowledge gap as there used to be. You
yeah.
know, so a lot of times people are now, they don't have that years and years and years lag like I did and like so many well-intentioned vegetarians did back in the day. Now it's almost like you need to be, you know, quite a bit older and not around the internet and stuff like that for that lack of awareness.
I want to believe that. I want to believe that. I think the knowledge is out there because you've probably experienced this as much as I am, maybe more. When mm-hmm. people, when you're sitting down to a meal, people know you're vegan or maybe you've mentioned you're vegan. Right away, they do their mea culpas. They start confessing. Oh,
right.
I eat a little bit of meat. I don't eat
right.
a lot of dairy. They confess
right.
because deep down they know what's going on. They know.
Right, right. Oh, for sure. What I was referring to before was the people who go vegetarian for mm-hmm. compassionate reasons, but I don't think that, like, the world's going vegan. I'm not one of those people who's, like, on top of the hilltop, you know, shrieking that because I know the reality is it is a slow shift, but it is a shift that's happening. But, yeah, you don't hear a lot of people bragging about how much meat they eat anymore.
No.
You know?
Except the people who eat bacon.
Yeah, the bacon people or the, you know, occasional paleo people or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, it does seem like, you know, I think that most of us, if we're honest, will admit that there is discomfort with this practice, you know. And so if not, there wouldn't be all this pushback and all this, you know, hate spewed, you know, toward vegans, you know. But yeah, I mean, I do think that people are being so clever and so smart and so creative and so skilled at closing that knowledge gap. And I can only thank people like you who've been plugging along forever and all the new people who are bringing in so much passion, you know.
And so many products.
So many products. I mean, that's the other thing, Karen, like you've got to remember back in the day,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was like if you wanted a specialty item or whatever, you'd have to go to that one little dusty co-op, you know, with the cans that had been probably sitting there for 7 years that had spider webs all over them.
Yeah.
You know? And today, it's just, there's...
And you were excited to see it. Oh, my God,
I
have one.
I know. And I don't want to sound crass, but, I mean, you have to acknowledge there's some real money
mm-hmm.
now being pumped into this. And it's not whether they're calling it plant-based, whether they're calling it non-dairy, whether whatever, however they frame it. This is vegan food, you know, and it's for people who are avoiding animal products. So that's amazing. That is amazing. And there wasn't this even 10 years ago.
Okay.
You know? So,
tell me what's going on at Vegan Street.
Oh, God, we're so busy. Well, one of the things that John and I do is we both also wear the hat of Vegan Street. I'm sorry, Chicago Vegan Mania. So we're both pretty immersed in that right now. So what we've been doing within the last few months is, how to condense it. Okay, so we originally started Vegan Street years and years ago, you know, like 1998, I believe. And we had it going for 3 years. And then, you know, my son was born and we took a hiatus and started working on other things. And then we resurrected Vegan Street, we call it kind of like Vegan Street 2.0, in 2013, I believe. So we took like a 10-year hiatus from it. We kept the URL and all that, but just didn't update the site. So anyway, when we brought Vegan Street back, it was like Vegan Street 2.0 with a consciousness of the new media that wasn't around when we were first there, like, you know, social media, Facebook and
yep.
Twitter and that sort of thing. So what I was seeing was, I had been on Facebook for some years before. I was seeing a lot of, you know, materials being shared that just weren't either visually compelling, had faulty information, wasn't communicated in what I viewed to be an effective way. So when we started talking about bringing Vegan Street back, I knew that, like, one of the first things we were going to concentrate on was getting our name known and you know, helping the community and helping the animals by creating better materials, better communication materials. So we started creating memes, M-E-M-E. A lot of people don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
I don't blame them. So we started doing daily memes for the first year, and then ever since then we've been doing 2 or 3 original memes a week, just at different angles of veganism, whether it's animal cruelty or the benefits of a vegan diet, or all these different angles, and we will never tire of it. It's just like it's just limitless. So, and then so we've been creating all these new materials. We've been selling vegan message gear on veganstreet.com, creating recipes, essays, reviews, interviews. And then a few months ago, we started Vegan Street Media, which is just veganstreetmedia.com, which is like, I don't know, I have no clue why it took John and I so long to put 2 and 2 together, but we're both from communications backgrounds. All we've been trying to do all these years is try to improve vegan communications, you know? So we finally put 2 and 2 together, like, hey, let's be a vegan communications firm. Finally figured it out. So I don't know why we didn't think of this before. So anyway, a few months ago, we launched Vegan Street Media, which is, like you said in the intro, helping vegan businesses and nonprofits and eventually advocates boost our message capacity, you know, whether it's, you know, creating new logos or websites or, you know, communications work. Mm-hmm. We want to be there. So anyway, that's what we've been doing.
Great.
Right. Yeah. So it's been busy.
Yeah. Well, please say hello to John for me. He's amazing.
I definitely will.
And so talented.
I definitely will. Thank you.
Yes.
Likewise to you.
Okay.
But yeah, like you were saying, there's no stopping, right?
We still have plenty of work to do.
Yeah.
Because even though those gaps are closing and more people
right.
know about it and more people are apologizing, there's still plenty
yeah.
of people that won't acknowledge that they know what's going on and
yeah.
still and want to do the same old, same old. And,
right.
you know, there are some numbers that say we're eating less meat and some saying we're
right.
eating more. And then there's the whole rest of the planet.
Right, exactly. I think that, you know, that's one of the things that's kind of a common problem is that we'll see that maybe meat or red meat or whatever consumption is going down in the U.S. and then extrapolate that means, you know, like somewhere it gets miscommunicated that people are eating less meat, but it's actually, you know, if you look to China and South America and more places that are becoming more affluent, the meat eating is going up. And these are places that tend to be more populous. So we really need to not lose sight of what work we need to do. I mean, definitely we need to be, you know, to avoid burnout, we need to be acknowledging, you know, progress. But we can't rest on our laurels. We can't do that to the animals. We need to keep moving forward.
Yep.
You know?
Deliciously. Moving forward deliciously.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, I want to hear about Raising Justice.
Oh, he's my son. I remember when you guys met, that was back when he was heavily into the dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs, yep.
Yeah, the pre-dinosaur era. He's an amazing kid. I got to say, I think I'm going to keep him. I've been kind of debating here and there. He's 14 now. He's so sensitive, and just, he's just such a creative, unusual, wonderful. I got to say, it's hard to be not sound like one of those moms, but I, you know, I'm kind of into him.
And he's totally embraced what you and John are about.
Yeah, I mean, this is, he owns it for himself. And, like, that's the thing is, I think a lot of times people think, oh, well, you're pushing it on him or you've indoctrinated him. It's just like all we did was nurture his natural compassion. And it's like, this is so, he owns it for himself. He owns his own, you know, way of framing things. He does advocacy without us, you know, this is who he is. And it's not like we, like most, I think everyone in our extended family, no one is a vegetarian or a vegan. And so we certainly didn't, you know, we raised him to understand that not everyone lives the same way that we do, but we still love them, you know. So I think, you know, we tried to raise him to understand that we can still love people even if we don't agree with, you know, some of what they do. And they can still be good people even if they make some decisions that we don't appreciate, you know. So anyway, he's his own spirit, you know. He's a really cool kid. I want you to meet him again.
I would like to meet him again. You've given him, I mean, those are lessons that aren't just appropriate for raising a vegan child. That's appropriate for raising any child.
Yeah, you know, thank you. One of the things that kind of saddened me raising him was, you know, like, just seeing how kind of young indoctrination against different people started. Like, you know, he would bring his vegan lunch to school, and then as young as first grade, people would be like, ew, you know, the other kids. And
How did he deal with that?
And I think that's one of the difficulties of being a vegan child is, like, that you see the wrongness in it, but you don't necessarily, you know, possess the communication skills to let things roll off or debate, you know.
Yep.
He just, because it's so real to him, you know, what the animals go through, and what the toll is on our planet, it's really hurtful. And I think that, like, when we're adult vegans, a lot of times we can kind of brush things off and you know, not take things so personally and not be so hurt by it. But, I mean, we all have our moments, too, even as adult vegans, you know, where we feel just so...
No, please. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just so... you know, unhappy about that.
Yeah.
So I think with kids, it can be harder. Like, some kids are really confident with it, and they really, I think the kids who, like, a lot of times they have other siblings, so they're used to being kicked on, or they're used to defending things. I think that they might have a thicker skin about it, but other people and other children can be more sensitive to it, and we need to be there to support them and help them learn how to, you know, be resilient in the face of that kind of behavior, you know?
It's hard because you never know what's going to happen. You can you do some role play and imagine some scripts, but...
Yeah, and that's true. And, you know, we are all really ultimately very different. You know, there's no one prototype of a person. And some kids fitting in is much, much more important than to other kids. Like, my son, he never cared. He still does not care about fitting in. It was more about his sadness about people being belittling about what the animals go through. But other kids, it's very important for them to feel like they are like the other kids. So you have to kind of be there for them, too, in that way, you know, and figure out how you can make them more comfortable while being different. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're all so unique in that way. You know, there's no one, this is the correct way to do things. You have to really see the children as individuals, you know.
Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
is superheroes.
Super what?
Superheroes.
Okay.
Vegan superheroes. Do we need vegan superheroes? And I think we already have one out there. Can you tell us about Vivian?
Oh, Vivian Sharp. I want to get back into her one day.
Yeah.
Okay. So Vivian, The Adventures of Vivian Sharp was my vegan superhero novel that I wrote some years back, a few years back, published a few years back. She came to me as kind of a fever dream originally years and years ago when she first developed in my mind. Vivian was just going to be a superhero character on a shirt that just said her name was V-Girl and her slogan was keeping animals off your plate. And it turns out that V-Girl is a big porn site. So,
oh, no. Oops.
So, but then from there we turn from, you know, this character to, it turned from a character to a short story. I think from a character to an essay to a short story to a novella to a novel. It just kind of just kept, there's a story that is almost like I was just the one typing it out. Like, you know, like it just kind of emerged and I couldn't slow it down and I couldn't stop it. But so basically she's an empath who wasn't always like that, but just somehow became awakened to what happens to other animals, and through that awakening she's not able to turn off her empathy, and she uncovers some pretty horrific stuff that's happening in her small town and has to, you know, kind of become a different person in order to expose it. And she's just a 15-year-old girl, the same age I was when I became vegetarian. And so she has to kind of deceive people, and she has to, you know, perhaps break the law, and she has to perhaps disappoint people in the unveiling of what's happening in this town.
Well, Marla, and, I would like to hear more about Vivian Sharp, and I think we should have more Vivian Sharp episodes. We need more vegan superheroes, but we're out of time.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
I know. We could talk for hours and hours.
I know.
And
add a little food and talk a little more.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so thank
you
for joining me.
Karen.
And thank you for doing everything. And thank John. And give Justice
likewise.
A hug for me. And
We're so appreciative for all that you do, Karen.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'll get to Vegan Street one day.
No, I know.
Yeah. Okay, Marla Rose, thank you for joining me. It's all about food.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to another episode of It's All About Food. Join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com, and you can send me comments at info@realmeals.org. Please remember, have a delicious week.